Okay, welcome back. This is Jeff Sachs from Web Yeshiva. We're learning Masechet Ta'anit. Tonight, the learning is in memory of Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael ben Yisachar of Tzipora Parnas, Zechrono Levracha, Jack Parnas, who of course was Shalom's dad. And if I've done my math correctly, Shalom, this is the 40th yard site, correct? Shalom. Shalom Parnas, are you there? I'm not sure. Anyway, so Shalom, for those of us in Efrat, Shalom sent around these little L'chaim kits. Did anybody else get one of these?
Yeah.
So I'll ask everyone to raise their glass. We'll drink a L'chaim in memory of Shalom Parnas's father, Zichrono Levracha. Shalom, are you there? Shalom, we hear you. Okay, well, anyway, for those of you outside of Efrat, you have to provide your own. And those of us here, we raise a glass, L'chaim, in memory of Jack Parnas. There's a little cake and a little mazonos. Okay. Here we are on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Daf Yud Amud Aleph with the Mishnah. Before we get to that, last week we had learned the Mishnah and this short Gemara about when we start saying V'tein Talu Matal Avracha, 60 days after the Tkufa. We pointed out that the way we calculate the 60 days does not actually correspond to what we know about the equinox, what we call the equinox. And David pointed me my attention to, there's a journal called Tradition, which has a column that's been running for many, many years called a survey of recent halachic literature, which once upon, for the past 50 years, it's been authored by Rabbi J. David Bleich. But before that, it was authored by Rabbi Emanuel Jacobovitz, who at the time was the rabbi of the Jewish Center. The Jewish Center or the Fifth Avenue Synagogue? I'm going to say the Jewish Center in New York. And then went back to England, where he was from, in order to serve as chief rabbi of England. So in an article from the spring 1965 issue of Tradition, he discusses, among other things, the solar cycle in the Jewish calendar. We, of course, have a lunar calendar, which is tied to the solar cycle, meaning unlike the Muslim calendar, which is completely lunar, so that the months keep sliding back. As if in one year Ramadan is in the spring, the next year it'll come out about a month earlier relative to the Gregorian calendar, until sooner or later it'll be in the winter. And then sooner or later, a year or two later, it'll be back in the fall, etc. Which is why sometimes Ramadan comes out in the summer, sometimes in the winter, sometimes in the fall, sometimes in the spring. The Jewish calendar, because of the obligation to always observe Pesach in the spring, is intercalated, which means we add in a certain number of extra leap months, the Adar Sheni, within the 19-year cycle of how the calendars line up. The question is, calculating the equinox and calculating the length of the year was a subject of machlokis between the Amoraim, between Shmuel and Rav Ada bar Ahava. They more or less get it right. Shmuel said that the exact length of the year is 365 and a quarter days. Now, if I were to ask you, what is the length of a year? You would say a solar year is 365 days, until leap year gives it one day more. But if I were to press you, oh yeah, is it exactly, it's exactly 365 days to make that cycle around the sun, you would admit that it's 365 and a quarter days, which is why once every 4 years, since you can't really have a quarter day, every 4 years we add a leap year. And, you know, you'd be more or less right. However, that is not exactly precise. And Rav Ada bar Ava calculated the difference to be actually much more accurate to what we now know precisely. He said that a solar year was 365 days, 5 hours, and then he has this different division of time. 997 chalokim, right? Parts. If you take a 60-minute hour and you divide it into 1,080 parts, it's how you get to that. So it's just slightly less than 365 and a quarter days. It's 365 days, 5 hours, and 50 some odd, 48, 49 minutes. It's about 11 minutes short. 11, 12 minutes short of exactly 365 and a quarter days. This causes a problem because, in fact, we go according to, we go basically according to Shmuel's opinion. And then we make adjustments to work it out. What happened was in the 16th century, when Pope Gregory realized that there was a problem with the calendar, with the Julian calendar. Because the Julian calendar set up by Julius Caesar followed the opinion of Shmuel, followed the opinion of science in its day, that the year was 365 and a quarter, which is pretty remarkable, come to, if you think about it, that in the ancient world, they were able to calculate so precisely with an 11, 12 minute, only an 11 or 12 minute error is itself remarkable. However, as you know, over time, that 11 or 12 minute error accrues so that the seasons start falling backwards. The problem becomes for Pesach, not for our Pesach, for their Pascha, for their Easter. Their Easter, like our Pesach, has to fall out relative to the spring. In that case, Easter has to fall out in certain relation to the vernal equinox, the spring equinox, and therefore Gregory, realizing that Easter was getting earlier and earlier and was losing its connection to the spring equinox, not that it was getting early, it was getting later. So in the 16th century, he cut out 10 days from the calendar. You went to bed on October 5th, 1582, and you woke up the next day, and it was October 15th, 1582. And those days in between disappeared, and this adjusted for all of the calendar shifting that had taken place over the centuries since Julius Caesar. And
I
then
think I remember that reading Isaac Asimov, who was born in Russia or Soviet Union, whatever it was at the time, and he was writing how because they made that change much later.
Yeah,
and he was born during the time that they changed the thing. He lost his birthday or something.
Yeah, it wasn't in the English speaking world was very late to adopt this. Right, and as if you look in the encyclopedias, if you look on Wikipedia, I think even for George Washington, the dates of birth, it'll say OS, Old System, before the English the British Empire adopted the Gregorian calendar. It took about 200 years until it became, you know, fairly universal. And in Russia, perhaps even later. And then Gregory also introduced this system of skipping leap years, of leaping leap years. Because in fact, we don't have a leap year once every 4 years. We have leap years once every 4 years, except on the century years that divide equally. Am I saying this right? That divide equally with 400. So, for example, the year 2000, I think I said this wrong last week, the year 2000, which should have been a leap year, 1996 was a leap year, 2004 was a leap year, it was a year of a presidential election, and it was a year of a Summer Olympics. It should have been a leap year, but it wasn't.
No, it was a leap year.
Oh, but it
1900 was not? Correct. 800, 18, correct. It was not 2000 was, because on the 400th.
So 2000 shouldn't have been a leap year because it's a century mark, except it's evenly divisible by 400. So therefore, in that case, becholzot, it was a leap year, right? There you go. So the question becomes, since we're still using the old sense of the equinox, right, which would have been, what, November... according to the old calendar, we should start saying it's the equinox is 60 days after the equinox is November 22nd or 23rd. Which one? November 22nd. Right? It is the equinox, except in leap years when it's the next day. If you add the days that Gregory took out of the calendar, that's how you get December 4th. Right? That's why we're saying, when we say it's 60 days after the equinox, it's not actually 60 days after the real equinox, the astronomical equinox. It's 60 days after the Julian equinox, which we know to be technically imprecise. So this goes back to the question of, well, like, when should we be saying V'tein talu matar, livracha? And what do you do if you live in a place where this doesn't correspond? Chazal were aware that the rainy season and the need for rain in Bavel is different than it was in Eretz Yisrael, which is why there are different dates. It's not just to accommodate the pilgrims that have to leave. Right? It's a recognition of the fact that in Bavel, the need for rain is less immediate. But what about in Germany? What about in England? What about in Australia? What about in Brazil? So in this little article here, Rabbi Jacobowitz points out that the Ritva in our Gemara says that Enochinami, there are places where it could be that you need the rain to start long before, or you need the rain to be going long after we stop saying V'tein talu matar livracha Pesach in the Southern Hemisphere, right? I mean, he didn't know about the Southern Hemisphere the way that we know about the Southern Hemisphere, but in the Southern Hemisphere, it could be that the rainy season is... So the Ritva says, Enachinami, if you live in a place that right now seasonally needs rain, but it's not between December 5th and Pesach, so you should say V'sein talu matar livracha, but you should say it in the bracha of Shomea Tefillah. The bracha of Shomea Tefillah is the place where you can add in any particular personal requirement that you have for your location, for your life, for your personal livelihood. But the recitation of a Saint Talumata Levracha in its proper place, that you correspond to the calendar the way that everybody else says you should do. Then he goes on to say, where are we? Yeah. Once we assume that, you see where we are here? Once we assume, then, that the public prayer for rain is merely mainly a symbolic token in which all Jews are to join together at only two alternative times, for those inside or outside the Holy Land, It follows that even those living in the Southern Hemisphere, where the seasons are reversed, should unite with their fellow Jews everywhere in the prayer for rain. Then he points out that this work that he's reviewing by somebody named Rappaport cites the ruling to this effect by Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector of Kovno, given to a questioner from Australia in 1893, and confirmed by Rabbi Shmuel Salant of Yerushalayim, although some decisions given by the London rabbinate and others to settle in Brazil as much as 300 years earlier had counseled the omission of the prayer altogether on the grounds that rain in such places might cause damage and even disease. So he points out that there was a psak of the London Betin in the 16th century to settlers in the New World in the Southern Hemisphere in Brazil, where the calendar is opposite, right? That maybe they should say it according to their own local custom. But that is not the halakha. That did not become the normative law. The normative law became to say it according to these two specific dates, because, as he points out, it's largely symbolic. It's largely symbolic. Yes. Okay. He then goes on to discuss what's going to happen after the year 2100. But since I'm assuming none of us are going to be around, we don't need to go into those details. Anybody planning on being here in the year 2100? About 78 years from now? Do the math. Do the math, folks. You know, the actuarial science.
They say the person who lived 150 has already been born. So I don't know who that is.
But, but it ain't you and me.
By the way, you were saying that this is mostly symbolic. There is another question that is related to the sugya that actually is very significant, but I haven't really seen a lot of discussion about it.
He said it.
No. I'm saying the issue of whether what you, you know, when you say Teitel Matar and Chutz Laaretz, you could say maybe that's less, that's, you know, it's not a Doraita, it's not a, you know, it's a minag of when you can say it, what's going on, you know, Eretz Yisrael. But there is actually a very significant Doraita issue, which is related to the same thing, and I don't know how people relate to it. Maybe they just don't pay much attention to it. But if you go by Shmuel's calendar, which is what we technically do, yep, right? We didn't ever switch to Ravada's calendar. So then Pesach has been falling not in the spring, according to the Julian calendar.
No, but it hasn't. In other words, it's still according to the Julian calendar.
No, but according to the Julian calendar, the equinox is earlier, and so therefore everything's moved earlier. Or later, whatever it is, it's. I don't know the exact details, but Pesach has been falling in the winter, according to the Julian calendar's estimation of when the winter is, and because the equinox for the autumnal equinox is later, which is why we say it on December 5th. The vernal equinox is also later, which means the Pesach has Ki'ilu in Julian winter.
Right.
Because we never actually made that adjustment. So that's a real problem. That's like a Doraita Pesach. We've had years where Pesach has fallen in the Julian winter, and you know, maybe we can just say it doesn't really matter, but then the whole thing is a little bit strange. Like how do we reconcile that with, you know, our Doraita obligation Lishmar Chodesh Aviv?
Is that true though? In other words, even with the leap years? What's the earliest Gregorian date that Pesach can fall?
There was a number of years ago, I remember when I was in yeshiva and people were talking about this. There was a professor at Bar Ilan named Moshe Weiss, who was a member of Kibbutz Luchot. He was pretty old then. I don't know what his story is now. He taught occasionally in my yeshiva, and that was an interest of his. And I heard about it then, and they said in the year 2000 something, that's going to be an issue. And then, you know, I don't remember what the years was. Something in the early 2000s, it was one of the earliest times that Pesach could be. And apparently, according to the Julian calendar, according to the Gregorian calendar, it wasn't a problem. According to the Julian calendar, it would really be in winter.
Pesach, I think
the earliest Pesach ever occurs is March 21st.
But March 21st is, you know, you have to go 11 days earlier.
Winter, according to the Julian.
That's the winter.
Yeah.
That's the according to the Julian. But Lamaisa, we live in a world of the Gregorian.
No, but the halacha was posaic according to the Gregorian.
Correct, so, but in other words. But that's only relevant before the 16th century. In other words, in the meantime, the calendar has been adjusted.
Not our calendar.
No, but our calendar is the earliest Pesach can fall out is March 21st, which is the March 21st, which is the actual equinox.
Right.
Right? In other words, scientifically, if you assume that spring starts on March 21st, right? Pesach never comes out before March 21st, right? It doesn't matter what you call that date, whether you call the date March 21st or March 31st.
I think it's March 25th, by the way.
March 25th.
Either way, it's still the Julian.
Yeah, either way.
Doesn't really make a difference, because if you're saying that Pesach has to be in the spring, and with the Julian calendar, it was all out of sync with nature until Gregory came along, so we can't really rely on the Julian calendar to know when spring is.
Right, but the idea is, like, when did science, like, change the Pesach from following Shmuel into following Chavada? It's like, it's a weird concept that we would say,
but it doesn't matter for, it only matters for setting up the leap years. With the leap years, Manavka.
In the Rav Soloveitchik talks about the halacha being, like, separate from the world, and, like, we have that, you know, kind of, like, blasting it off into space, and it's a separate, you know, it's a separate universe that isn't actually necessarily reflecting what we have here. So, like, the calendar that we follow, the leap years, the calendar we have, actually is not accurate. If Gregory hadn't made that adjustment, if we were still living according to the times of, you know, in the Gemara, then they would realize there was a problem, because it was clear before the equinox, and they'd have to have another leap year to fix it. And we never do that. In some ways, it's hypothetical, but it also is sort of real, because we live in the world of a Julian calendar. Luckily, we don't live in the world of Gregorian, because no rabbi's ever said, yeah, let's switch to the Gregorian. So we didn't ever do that.
I'm not sure I'm smart enough to understand any of this, and I really wish Tom was here, because he really does understand all of this.
That's true.
But the point is that Pesach is always on Yud Dalet Nisan. Regardless of whether you're corresponding that to a date in the Gregorian or the Julian calendar, Yud Dalet Nisan does not fall out before the astronomical realities of the equinox.
Okay.
Because of this cycle of adding in Adar Sheni Lefi HaTzorech on the cycle. Okay. Let's go now to the Mishnah. The Mishnah towards the bottom of Daf Yud. Higia Yud Zayin B'mar Cheshvan. Right? We start saying V'tein Talu Matal Avracha on, we in Eretz Yisrael, on Zayin Cheshvan. All of it, by the way, this whole conversation is only for the B'nai Chutz Laretz, which thankfully none of us are. Maybe somebody listening to the recording is. And we feel sorry for them. But it's a theoretical case for them. We all live in Eretz Yisrael, where we start saying, not according to the Tkufa, the equinox, but to Zayin Cheshvan. 10 days later, if rain still hasn't come, Higia Yud Zayin B'mar Cheshvan, V'lo Yardug Shamim, and it hasn't yet rained, Hitchilu HaYechidim Mitanim. Individuals, the Gemara will explain what's an individual, who's an individual. Everybody's an individual. Right, but that doesn't mean everybody fasts. The yechidim, the unique individuals, start fasting. Gimel ta'aniot, right? They would start fasting three fasts in order to change the world, in order to have an impact on the heavens, and to bring the rain. What kind of fast is that? Ochlin v'shotin mechashecha. It's not a Yom Kippur fast. It's a sunrise to sunset fast, and you can eat and drink at night. Umutarin bimalacha, there's no prohibition of doing malacha, rechitza, sicha, nilata, sandal, v'tashmish amita. And all of the other prohibitions of the major fast days, which are bathing and anointing yourself and wearing leather shoes and marital relations, those are all permitted on this rain fast. Higia Rosh Chodesh Kislev, a week and a half later, comes, almost 2 weeks later, rather, and it still hasn't rained. Velo yadug shamim. Betin gozrin shalosh ta'aniot ala tzibur. Then Betin makes a ta'anit tzibur. A ta'anit tzibur means everybody fasts, not just the yechidim. Ochlin v'shotin mechashecha u'mutarin b'melacha v'chitza v'sicha. But aside from the fact that now at Rosh Chodesh Kislev everybody fasts, the halacha is the same. These three fasts, they are morning to sunset, sunrise to sunset, and they do not include the other prohibitions that we know about from Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. So the Gemara asks, man yechidim, who are these individuals that fast starting from the 17th of Cheshvan? Omar Rav Huna, Rabbanan. Rav Huna said, it's the rabbis. Who are the yechidim? Who are the distinguished people? Who are the yechidei? Who are the yechidei skula? Those are the rabbis. Right? The rabbis start fasting. The rabbis are very holy people. They start fasting, and hopefully that will do the job. Va'omar Rav Huna, but Rav Huna said, yechidim mitanei shlosh taniyot sheni v'chemishi v'sheni. And these three fasts that the rabbis would fast from the 17th, it's what we call Bahab. Sheni, Chamishi, Sheni. They fast on Monday, then on Thursday, then on Monday again. You know, there are customs like this to fast Ta'aniot Bahab because of the letters of the days. Yom Bet, Yom Hei, and Yom Bet. So it's called Bahab. There are people that fast, do these fasts after the Shalosh Regalim. After Sukkot and then Pesach and Shavuot, they fast Bahab on Mondays and Thursdays for a couple weeks after. Well, it's always a good idea. You know, you eat a lot on Yontif, so it helps you take off the weight. But there were these fasts for the particularly righteous. And there's still people today who fast on Bahab, but it's not quite so common. So the Gemara says, Mai Kamash Malan. So what is this coming to teach us? What is Rav Huna's halacha coming to teach us? Tanina, the Gemara, I'm sorry, the Mishnah, later on, and Daf Tedvav, the Mishnah says, Ein gozrin ta'anit al tzibur batchila b'chamishi, shelo lahafkia et ha-sha'arim. The Mishnah had said, when they make these fasts, you never start on a Thursday. You always start on a Monday. Because if you start on a Thursday, it's going to play havoc with the Sha'arim. Sha'arim here means the prices. Because what'll happen? Thursday is the shuk. Thursday, everybody, the villagers would come in from the outlying villages and would come to the marketplace and would sell the food. And it was the busiest day, just like today. If you try going to the supermarket on Thursday night, it's much busier than any other night of the week because people are doing their shopping for Shabbat. So since anyway, the Shuk is the busiest day of the week. And if it's a fast day, if they are gozer that it's a fast day, well, you know how it is, right? You ever go into the supermarket late on the day on a fast day? Everybody's looking for their orange juice and their cream cheese and the bagels. And, you know, we have a bagel shop here in Efrat. So I try going there to get a bagel on a fast day, right? Because everybody's buying bagels because there's a serious minhag that people have to eat bagels after a fast. So there's a fear that anyway, the markets are very crowded on Thursdays. Supply and demand usually means the prices go up. But if everybody's also going to be busy shopping for the break fast, so then that will wreak havoc with the prices. So we never start the cycle of fasts on a Thursday for fear that it will affect the prices. It's possible also that if Thursday is the first fast of the cycle, you know, and people are still a little tense about it, they're not yet used to it. So it could be that the villagers won't come into town to bring their goods. So there'll be a lack of supply. Lack of supply means higher prices. So Rav Huna says, you always start on Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni. The Gemara says, why does Rav Huna have to say that? We know that from another Mishnah. We know that from a Mishnah five pages down the road that tells us you never start on Thursday. You always start on Sunday. Ela shalosh ta'aniyot harishonot Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni. So what's Rav Huna telling us? Mahu detema. Mahu detema, what is this coming to say? Meaning, what's the problem? Rav Huna states the obvious, or the apparent obvious, if you know how to read the Gemara. So mahu detema, what is he coming to teach us that we may have mistaken if he had not stated the obvious? Hanimili tzibur. Aval Yochid lo. Rav Hun is telling us that I might have thought that this idea that you never start the three fasting cycle on Thursday, you only start it on Sunday, I would have thought that's the later set of fasts, the Ta'anit Sibur, when the Betin says everybody has to fast. But the first fast, the fast that begins after the 17th if it hasn't rained, that is for, I might have thought that, which is only for the Yechidim, only for the rabbis, that this law of not starting on a Thursday doesn't apply. Kamash Malon, it's coming to teach us. No, reject that idea. Reject that Havamina. Reject that hypothesis that I had that the first set of fasts could start on a Thursday. Reject the idea that the rule that the three cycle fast has to start on Monday only applies to the Tzibah. That it's not correct in all cases. It's always Monday, Thursday, Monday, and never the other way around, regardless of whether it's a Ta'anit Yachid or a Ta'anit Tzibur. Tanya Nami Hochi, there's a Braisa which says something basically the same. Keshehitchilu hayechidim lihitanot, when the individuals start fasting after the 17th of Cheshvan, mitanin sheni chamishi v'sheni, and there it says it explicitly. Umafsikin b'rashei chodashim. But if, now it's a kind of funny thing, the 17th is the kick-in date, but the 17th can be on any day of the week. So, in other words, if the 17th comes, if the 17th is a Sunday, and it hasn't rained yet, so then the next day, the 18th, they start the three cycle fasts, Sunday, Thursday, Sunday. But if the 17th itself is a Monday, and on that day it hadn't rained yet, then they start declaring the fast. But what's going to be the first fast day?
The following Thursday.
The following Monday. If the 17th is a Monday, right?
Oh, the 17th is a when? Okay.
If the 17th is a Sunday, the first fast, and it hasn't rained, they declare that they kick in the fast. The first Monday is the next day is the 18th, right? So it'll be the 18th, the following Thursday, and the 25th, the following Monday. But if the 17th itself is a Monday, and it doesn't rain on that day, they say, okay, we have to start fasting Bahab. What's the next available day to begin the cycle? You wait a whole week later,
the following Monday,
right? Which is the 24th, right? Which is the 24th, right? Which means that you could then go straight for, if it doesn't rain during that week, you would then end up going straight into the Ta'anit Sibur for it not having rained on Rosh Chodesh Kislev.
Does Lo Adu Rosh affect the dates that the fast day, that the 17th could come out?
Yeah, Lechora, because according to our set calendar, where Tishrei can't fall out on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, so then that will affect the next month as well. That will affect which days Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan can fall out, but according to the... Yeah, correct. But you'd have to figure that, you have to do that math yourself. But if those days fall out, if the days for fasting fall out on Rosh Chodesh Uviyamim Tovim Haktuvim b'Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is a kind of what do you call it? It's a rabbinic work that lists all type of festive days that dates and calendar events and miracle days many of which are forgotten to us, but it lists certain days in which you can't fast. But you know, there are certain days you're not allowed to fast. You can't fast on, you don't fast on Rosh Chodesh, you don't fast on Hanukkah, you don't fast on Purim. There are all types of days where it's forbidden to fast. Remember when I was a kid, when I first went to yeshiva, we learned the halachot of Hanukkah. We learned the halachot of Hanukkah. And on the test, one of the questions was, name two things that are forbidden on Hanukkah. The correct answer is ta'anit and hesped. You can't fast, and you don't give a normal eulogy in the normal way if somebody passes away, because it's a happy day. So my friend, he forgot. He didn't know which one. So he named two things he can't do on Hanukkah. So he said, you're not allowed to fast, and you're also not allowed to murder people. And the teacher had to give him full credit, you know, on a technicality. So the Bahab fasts, right, if it falls out on Rosh Chodesh, right, if one of those Bahab fasts after the 17th falls out on Rosh Chodesh Kislev itself, it gets canceled. It gets preempted. Tanu Rabbanan, Al Yomar Adam, Talmid Ani, Eini Ra'ui Liot Yachid. So, in the Ta'anit Yachid, who fasts? The rabbis. So, who's a rabbi? In other words, the border between Talmid and Rav is somewhat porous. Right? And it's not like one day you're a Talmid and the next day, we're not talking about like the day that Moshe Rabbeinu put his hands on Yehoshua ben Nun and Yehoshua was filled with the Spirit of God. Let me tell you, even after you get your rabbinic decree, you're still a Talmid, you're still a student. So they declare it's the 17th of Cheshvan and no one has seen a drop of rain yet. And they say, okay, the Yechidim, meaning the rabbis, have to fast. So you can't say, I'm not a rabbi. I'm still a Talmud. Right? You know, there are a lot of Rabbonim, they're great Talmidei Chachamim who still sit and learn all day. So they could claim they're not really rabbis, they are learners. Like this distinction that we have in English between teacher and student, it's usually clear who is one and who is the other. They're standing on opposite sides of the desk. One is getting paid to be there, and the other one is paying to be there. In the world of the yeshiva, it's not always so clear. So once they say it's time for the yechidim to start fasting, you can't say, I'm not a yochid. I'm not a rabbi. I'm still a student. Eini ra'ui liyot yachid. I am not fit to be considered one of the holy rollers who have to fast now. Ella kol talmidei chachamim yechidim. Anyone who can lay claim to the title talmid chacham, a student of the wise, is considered a yachid for the purposes of having to fast in the first cycle of fasts. Ezehu yachid ve'ezehu talmid. Yachid kol sherui limanato parnas al hatzibur. Oh, shalom, what a nice idea for your father, Zichron Levracha. Who is a yachid? Who is a very distinct, special man? Anyone who's a parnas. Right? Shalom's last name is Parnas. Shalom, is your microphone back on?
Yes.
So why didn't you say a word about your father? We couldn't hear you before.
You know, I sent out, a notice to the family group, to his cousins, second cousins, third cousins, a very large group in the WhatsApp. And it's like amazing the responses I got. And people that, you know, you died 40 years ago, people who are today, like in their 50s, they were not even teenagers when he died. And they remembered him and, you know, what a great smile he had, what a great person he was. That's what I got to say.
Okay. Well, it was fortuitous because this line in the Gemara is so nice. Yachid kol sherui lemanato parnas. Anybody who's a parnas, he's a yachid. He's a special person, right? But the pshat of the Gemara is anybody who's fit, anybody who's in the category of being appointed as a communal leader, right? Somebody that you would make a communal leader. That's a yachid. And a talmid. Kol shesholin oto dvar halacha betalmudo veomer vaafilu bemasechet kala. A talmid is anyone you can ask him about his learning, what he's learning, and he knows how to answer, even from masechet kala. Masechet kala. Well, there's different ways to explain what the Gemara means. It probably means they used to have, in the times of the Gemara, they had something called the Yarche Kala. Twice a year, they would gather together. It was like a convention of learners. And they would all learn the same thing. So whatever the Masechta was during that Yarche Kala, right, was something that everybody was holding it. They were all learning it. Meaning, it was something that was, let's say, common knowledge. And it was like, it's not fair. If you're learning, like right now in the Daf Yomi, they're learning Psochim, right? So if I go to a Daf Yomi guy and I ask him a kasha about something in Bava Basra, so it's been many years since he saw Bava Basra. Bava Basra was 4 or 5 years ago in the Daf Yomi. But if somebody learns Daf Yomi and I ask him something from that day's Daf, they should know what I'm talking about. Right? So that's kind of what it is. A Talmud is anybody who has that minimum basic mastery over his studies. Tanu Rabbanan, lo kol harotze la'asot atzmo yachid oseh. But not everybody can claim the title of. And first thing I was talking about people who can fairly be put in that category of yachid, but try to worm their way out of it because they don't want to get stuck fasting. So for the purposes of fasting, it's a pretty expansive category, right? It's the rabbis, but it's also the people that are seriously into their learning, even if they're not employed in what we call being a rabbi. However, not everybody can claim to be a yachid. Not everybody can claim to be one of the holy rollers, one of the people that are considered the spiritual elite of the community. Lo kol harotze lasot atzmo yachid oseh. Talmid oseh. But somebody who is one of these students who are holding in their learning, who have a certain amount of minimal mastery over their Talmudic knowledge, they can make the claim that they are. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Oseh v'zachu latov. Lefi she'ein shevachulo ela tsarhulo. But Rabbi Meir says, what do you care? If somebody wants to claim that they are a yachid, that when they have declared that the yachidim, the members of this exclusive society of yachidim, have to fast, if you want to claim that you're one of them, go ahead. It's not a praise for you. There's no benefit for you. It's not like you get a tax break. What do you get? You have to fast 3 days.
Is that the only nafka mina? Or are there other things where you
apparently
can get
right
some
here, that's the nafka mina. That's the nafka mina. Right? In other words, if it comes time to like hiring the Rosh Yeshiva, we're going to check you out. But if all it means is that you're part of this crowd of the Yechidim, it means you have to fast. So, El Bakasha, if you want in, we're not going to check your tzitzis. We're not going to give you a bachina to see how much Gemara you know. Right? Because it's not like you're getting some kind of benefit from it. You're getting just.
There's that issue of Yorah to be call yourself Yechid. I know that, like, for example, there's some halachot where you're not supposed to, like, they say that, I don't know, like, a chatan shouldn't say Kriyat Shema on his wedding day because he's not kind of kavana, but the truth is that, like, you're insinuating you have kavana so much of the rest of the days that you're like, that's going to be such a
different
thing.
Yeah, but that's not the halacha anymore.
I'm saying, but there are some halachot that people say that they are like a higher level that they might have to take these additional stringencies upon themselves.
Yeah.
You're quite you could think that a person, you know, in these days that let's be out Machmir, the other guy, it's a little bit of a gross idea.
Yeah, but in other words, here the Chumra is fasting more. The presumption
is... You want a cup of coffee today? No.
Say again?
Would you like to join me for a cup of coffee today? No, I'm fasting.
Look at you.
That's what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Meir seems to agree with it, that there might be an issue with it. I mean, it's a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yosef.
Yeah. And Achinami. Maybe that's the point. Rav Avadi Yosef says that this whole idea of yuhara, which can, I guess, be translated as like spiritual arrogance, like, you know, like trying to show you're holier than the next person, you're more stringent than the next person. He points out that it's very culturally constructed. Once upon a time, you know, tefillin de Rabbeinu Tam. We all wear tefillin of Rashi. But there's another way of arranging the tefillin according to the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Some people, everybody who puts on tefillin puts on Rashi tefillin. Some people also put on a second pair of tefillin afterwards for Rabbeinu Tam. So for many generations, this was considered something of yuhara, right? The people that put on Rabbeinu Tam. And people that put on Rabbeinu Tam would do it privately. People that were stringent about putting on the second pair of tefillin in order to fulfill all the opinions of how the tefillin should be would put it on privately when they got it home after shul. But in the last generation or so, you see people go to shul, their tefillin, their talis bag is extra big because it has to hold their talis and two pairs of tefillin. And on the tefillin it says Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. And you see sometimes in shul after the Shemona Esrei, people take off one pair of tefillin and they put on the other pair of tefillin. So Rav Avadia said this was something that in past generations was yuhara. Because tefillin are very expensive. And it was a great Mesirat Nefesh that, of course, every Jew had a pair of tefillin, right? That, you know, your parents bought you tefillin when you became bar mitzvah, right? You remember the old tefillin, like the what they used to call bar mitzvah tefillin, that looked like they were made out of, like, origami, right? Because they were affordable. Like, how could those immigrant people afford, like, now everybody has tefillin gassot, fancy tefillin. Like, a basic pair of tefillin today, like a simple pair of tefillin today, is a 5,000 shekel. Right? It's an investment. It's not like something you buy every Rosh Chodesh. So Rav Avadia said, Bizman Azeh, where everybody has, you know, people drive, people that own two cars. Right? There are plenty of families that own two cars. Owning two pairs of tefillin is no longer a yuhara. Right? It's not, and it's the yuhara was that you were showing not just that you were frumer than everyone else, but that you were a little more, it was a form of conspicuous consumption. Right? So in our day and age, even though, of course, there's still poor people, Rachmana Litzlan, but it's not yuhara to have two pairs of tefillin the way it used to be. So here, yuhara is not, it's fasting. It's not, you know, b'sach hakol, it's a tzar, according to Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's a tzar. Like, you know, if you're willing to go through the effort of fasting three extra days, you don't have to, you're entitled to look a little holier than everyone else, right? That if that's the cost of doing it, that's but in Achinami, Rabbi Meir says you shouldn't do it. At Tanya Idach, there's another brice that says Lo kol harotze lasot atzmo yachid oseh, right? Talmid oseh, that same as the previous brice. Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Bamadvarim Omrim, when do we say that a person shouldn't put on airs to claim that they are a yachid? Bidvar shel shevach. If putting on the airs gives them, there's like a kind of tangible benefit to it, where they're going to be praised for it, where it's going to be a matter of, where it's going to be a matter of honor. Bidvar shel shevach, aval bidvar shel tsar, oseh. V'zachur latov, and now he goes further. It's the same machlokus. It's just with different players. But he goes further than Rabbi Yossi because he says not only are you allowed to take on the extra fasts, which after all are not a great. It's not a great honor. It's not a great shevach, right? It's a burden to take on extra fasting. And he says zachur latov, good for you. We should remember him for the good. Zachur latov. She'en shevach hulo elatzar hulo. So it's the same machlokas, it's just phrased slightly differently. What time is it? Okay, let's just drop more. Let's go down. View. You see where we are? Tanura banan. Mi shahaya mitane al hatsara ve'avra al hachole ve'nitrape hareze mitane u'mashlim. If you are fasting for some kind of tsar, because let's say you started fasting, the 17th came and the rain didn't come, and you're in the middle of the Bahab, and you fast on the Monday, and on Tuesday it starts pouring rain. Enough rain comes on Tuesday that if it had come only 2 days earlier, we would have never declared the fast. Nevertheless, you keep fasting. Right? Nevertheless, you keep fasting. Or let's say you took on a fast as a form of tshuva for the health of a sick person, and they have a miracle cure. You keep fasting, and you finish out that fast. Haholech mimakom she'ein mitanin lemakom shemitanin harei ze mitanei imahem. So let's say in your town there was rain, so you're not fasting, but you have to travel from wherever it is. You're traveling from Yavne to Yerushalayim, from Yerushalayim to Tzipori, whatever it is. Each place would have had its own betin to say whether or not we need to fast. So if you're coming from a place that had rain and there was no need to fast, and you go to a place where it did fast, harei ze mitanei imahem. You have to act according to the principles of the people there. You have to fast along with them. This is like we learned a number of years ago in Masechet Pesachim, the perek Mokom Shenahogu. That if you're a local minhagim, if you move to another place, whether you have to take on the local customs. Makom shemitanin lemakom she'en mitanin hare ze mitaneu mashlim. And if you're coming from a place that's fasting, if you have to be fasting on this Monday or this Thursday because your place is in the middle of this drought, and you go temporarily to another place where they're not fasting, nevertheless you should continue to fast even in that other place.
So it's just parallel
Pesachim. It's the same. It's exactly, yes. I'm pretty sure that this Gemara is quoted there in Pesachim. Shachach v'achal v'shata. It's a fast day. And you forgot. And you ate. And you drank. This happens. I remember, again, when I was in yeshiva, it was Asara Bateves. It was one of those, it was when Bravender's was in the supermarket. You know, where Bravender's was, you know, now where the butcher is in the upper shopping center in Efrat. And I remember my Rebbe, he was very sick. He had a cold and he was coughing and whatever it was. And it was Asara Bateves. It was one of those freezing cold, you know, rainy, Gush Etzion days. And in the middle of the shiur, he said to one of the guys, "Could you bring me a cup of tea?" There was like a little peanut tea right off the Beit Midrash. So it was like a little strange because it was a Sar Batevet. So a guy gets up, he figures, I don't know, the Rebbe's sick, he's got a cold, whatever it is. So he has the tea, he hands it to the Rebbe has the tea, and the same guy who had said, you know, you can't fast and you can't murder people. He said to the Rebbe, could you tell us what the halachot of drinking on a fast day are? And the Rebbe was like, he had forgotten that it was a Sarah Batevet. So if you forget, you eat, you drink on a fast day. Al yitre'e bifnei hatzibur. You shouldn't show yourself in front of the tzibur. Now, this is also true for people. You know, there are plenty of people who are allowed to eat on a fast day because they're sick, because they're ill, pregnant, etc. Nevertheless, you should be a little tsanua about it. You shouldn't show yourself in front of everybody else eating and drinking. Ve'al yanhig idunim ba'atzmo. and you shouldn't act luxuriously. You know, everybody have a fast day, everybody's going around. You know, like people look like on Tisha B'Av afternoon, right? People are going around, they're like chalash, they're thinking about the coffee they didn't have, they have no energy. But like if you had a big breakfast, because you're allowed to eat, so you shouldn't be like, you know, bouncing around. You shouldn't go out to play tennis. You shouldn't, right? You should still show that you're a partner to the tsa'ar of the tzibur. The fast days are there because we commemorate tragedies that befell the Jewish people. The great historical tragedies. And the fasts that Chazal, the fast that the Beit Din would establish, like drought, that's because there's something very perilous facing your world or your community. So if you have a heter to eat, for whatever reason, that doesn't absolve you of the need to show your connection to the trauma and the troubles of the community. If you accidentally broke your fast, and now you have like, by accident, you have all this energy because you know, you had that bagel and the orange juice. So then, you know, don't look too energetic. Don't look too peppy. Shneemar vayomer Yaakov levanav lama titra'u. When there was the Parshat Miketz, when there was the famine in Eretz Yisrael, in Canaan, and Yaakov tells the sons, you should go down to Mitzrayim in order to buy the food. So he says, Lama titra'u. So the pshat of the pasuk probably means something like, don't just stand there looking at each other. Go down to Egypt and buy us food. So the Gemara darshins that pasuk lama titra'u, right? Why should you be seen? Why should you show yourselves? Which again, colloquially, probably means, you know, don't just stand there looking around. Lama titra'u, Omar lahem Yaakov levanav, al tara'u atzmachem kesha'atem sve'im. Don't show yourself after you've had all the food. We're going to get him at Mitzrayim. Lo bifnei Esav velo bifnei Yishmael kedei shelo yitkanu bachem. In other words, they weren't the only people in Canaan who were starving. All the other nations were starving. All the other peoples and tribes were starving also. So he says, we've got a plan. We're going to go to Mitzrayim. We're going to buy food. But when you buy that food, you know, like, don't show off in front of the other starving people, lest they be jealous of us. Okay, I wanted to mention the halacha, but maybe we'll start with that next week. The halacha talks about like what happens if you forget on a fast day, but we'll come back to that next week. And in the meantime, we were learning in memory of Yaakov Yisrael ben Yisachar et Zippora Parnas Zichrona Levracha on his 40th Yeretz site. All right, we'll continue next week. Shkoyach to you, Shalom, literally Tzedala Derech, you went all around Efrat delivering off the cake and the drinks and the...
Okay.
L'chaim.
Bye.